Acting outside your comfort zone is difficult to do, but it's difficult for a set of very predictable reasons. Once you understand these reasons, you'll be better equipped to manage them. As I indicated earlier, I've uncovered a set of 5 core psychological barriers people often face while trying to act outside their comfort zones. Number 1, the authenticity challenge. The feeling that this isn't me at all, and the distress that results from that feeling. Number 2, the likability challenge. The sense that doing this will make people not like me, and the worry that results from that perception. Number 3, the competence challenge. The feeling that I'm not good at this behavior, and it's obvious to others, along with corresponding feelings of embarrassment and perhaps shame. Number 4, the resentment challenge. The strong sense that I shouldn't have to be doing this behavior in the first place, and the frustration and anger that result from this feeling. Number 5, the morality challenge. The feeling that the behavior isn't something I should be doing, and the anxiety and guilt that can result from that sense. You won't necessarily experience all 5 of these challenges every time you consider acting outside your comfort zone. But really, any one of these challenges can be enough to make this very hard to do. Ahead, we'll talk about the creative ways we find to avoid acting outside our comfort zones, in part to avoid these feelings. But for now, let's dig into the challenges themselves. Why it can be so hard for us to step outside our comfort zones in the first place. The authenticity challenge. This isn't me at all. I know I am not a real CEO, but rather just some guy running a business. A quote from a CEO of a technology company. As Jane Reddy prepared herself to perform her first inspection and interrogation of young cadets at the military academy in the South, where she was one of the senior cadets, she started to feel a pit in her stomach. She fully understood the purpose of the daily formation exercises to make sure that the cadets were well prepared and could speak logically under pressure. But the problem was that the aggressive, macho, in-your-face, and often demeaning style with which upperclassmen typically interrogated younger cadets felt deeply uncomfortable and inauthentic to Jane. Jane's typical style would be far less aggressive, but that's not how she was expected to act, or at least how she thought she was expected to act. So when it came time to interrogate her first cadet, and Jane noticed he hadn't shined his belt buckle, which was a requirement for these formation exercises, Jane really let him have it. She screamed like she had never screamed at anyone in her life. She was a drill sergeant on steroids, berating the youngster like nobody's business. And it was successful, so successful, in fact, that after about 15 seconds, the cadet began to cry. Now, that was not the plan, and something Jane never expected to happen. There she was, acting like a monster to this poor kid, and the kid starts to cry. And what does Jane do? She starts to scream at him even louder and berate him even more. You're crying about a belt buckle? Do you want your mommy? What's going to happen when you see actual bullets flying? Are you going to cry then? That night, when she went back to the barracks and crawled into bed, exhausted and ashamed, Jane realized there was no way she could ever do anything like that again. The problem, though, was that she also needed to fit in and perform her role in an effective manner. And she did believe in the ultimate purpose of the activity, to groom upperclassmen as leaders and to test and develop the younger cadets. But the method of doing this was simply intolerable, and she had to figure out a solution. And fast. These formations took place daily, and she would have to do the same thing all over again to another set of cadets the very next day.